Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. I'm on vacation this week, so rather than our usual news roundup, we're bringing you something a little different. A couple months ago, I interviewed Vikram Advi from the University of Illinois about the use of AI in digital agriculture. He was very knowledgeable, and you can find the article on Telecompetitor by searching for digital ag. At the end of our conversation, he said, "You know who you should really talk with? Heather Hampton Nodal." Heather is a farmer who uses digital agriculture and AI regularly, and she also has extensive experience working on an FCC task force addressing broadband and connectivity needs. So today, I'm bringing you the first half of an interview with Heather from mid-May, in which she talks about her work with the FCC. Let's get into it. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and talk about your experience with broadband, with farming, and with digital agriculture?
Hi, I'm Heather Hampton Nodal. I'm a farmer from South Central Illinois, and I'd worked to found a countywide economic development corporation. And one of our top priorities, and this is more than 20 years ago, top priorities was to improve connectivity, specifically broadband and data connectivity throughout our rural county in Illinois.
You were on the FCC's Precision Agriculture Task Force. Can you talk a little bit about your work with them? And I know that you were involved also in their Accelerating Broadband Deployment Working Group. So I'd love for people to hear about just all of that work you did.
Oh, absolutely. So I learned of my appointment to the Federal Communication Commission's Precision Agriculture Task Force, I think December of 2019, and then we started to get to work in earnest with our working groups in March of 2020.
Perfect.
So that coincided with the advent of a whole lot of virtual meetings, right? And the irony was early on, so many of us, because it was precision agriculture, we had many representatives from throughout the country. And so this irony of trying to find the right platform that we could work with, that everyone had adequate bandwidth to be able to support video and voice and putting up images at the same time. You know, there's a lot going on in that space.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing that came out of that COVID era, I think, was lightning acceleration and adoption of virtual and the recognition for improved broadband. So within that task force, initially, I served as the vice chairman of the Accelerating Broadband Deployment Group to Unserved Areas, but kind of the chairman really gave me kind of full license, if you will, to put together agendas and basically run the meetings and give reports to the task force. In the second round of the task force, I chaired the Connectivity Needs Working Group. That was fascinating because I don't have a background in telecom engineering or any of the, call it the technical aspects, and yet there I was chairing discussions amongst the experts who do have that kind of background and resources. But that was a great growth moment, and we did a lot of good work. Then in the third and final round, I was back to chairing the Accelerating Deployment Working Group, and our official recommendations can be found, as well as all the minutes and committee meetings and interim reports, can be found on the FCC's website. If you just search Precision Agriculture Task Force in your general search engine, you can find a lot of good thinking. And also, I mean, there was compromise that happened along the way because we had such different interests at the table.
Interesting. I'm wondering if you remember off the top of your head any of the most significant findings or recommendations.
Gosh, they ranged. Because we had several working groups, I mentioned the two that I had the good fortune to chair. There was also a data and mapping subgroup. So a lot of their work informed the Data Fabric effort and Data Quality Act, and they had continued recommendations for how to improve the fabric and how to continually ground truth. One other outcome that had come out of that particular working group's recommendations and the task force as a whole was a, call it a ground truthing app that FCC had developed. Now, I've not used it recently, but in the moment, in that window, it was very, very forward thinking and timely. in a way that those of us out here, you know, the average Jane and Joes that are just trying to get work done, could try to help ground truth the actual service that we were receiving in the countryside. And another working group is adoption and jobs. So they had a lot of, I mean, there's the high level things where you think, well, we need training. Okay. But they would get into, well, what are the hurdles and the barriers to that? What kind of, especially in rural areas. So these are the areas where we need connectivity the most. And how can we train up not only the younger generation, but retrain people to do what is needed? So identifying what's needed in an industry that is changing so fast, so quickly, and then tooling it in such a way that they can, you know, have adaptive learning and be relevant, right? So those are some of their high-level recommendations. Accelerating broadband deployment, many of our initial recommendations kind of got interwoven into what we all know now as BEAD. So we had these historic investments in telecommunications and broadband in general. We followed up with recommendations like, for example, where states have potentially additional BEAD funding, you know, giving them more flexibility to determine what technology. There were many members of our group wanted to be completely technology neutral, so to speak, and there were those reissuance of BEAD guidance and other federal guidance that I would say became more neutral as the play went on. We had members who were on both sides of that, if you would say, you know, within the task force of that camp. But in our final round, I know that one of the more contentious recommendations that the task force ultimately approved, but in the working group, we did not have consensus. But the task force said, we do need to allow rural areas where it is unserved and underserved, we need to allow them to secure multiple funding sources to reach this area. Because for those of us, again, from a rural area, our experience, our reality informs us that the business case for the initial capital outlay is not strong enough to attract one of the major incumbent providers, but there might be that local regional interest that could say, if I get assistance with this initial capital outlay, I can find a way to make this operating cost work over time. And they're not looking at that 45% return. They may look at a smaller ROI than one of the major national or international players might look for. So that was something that I, from my perspective, I fought literally very hard for that, because having lived and worked and sweat in rural areas for my entire life, I recognize that is significant. And it doesn't mean people are going to take advantage of the program. What it means is we're going to serve people with broadband and with internet and build out that initial infrastructure. So that's just one example. We spent a lot of time as well in both connectivity needs and accelerating broad deployment working groups looking at spectrum and licensing procedures for that, trying to at least identify some of the challenges where our tribal, our friends, our colleagues, our peers in rural areas that are also part of tribal organizations, they have a whole other layer. I just think I have to deal with bureaucracy. I'm like, oh my gosh, what the heck? But we were looking at spectrum in terms of, and here again, I'm not the technical expert, but we'd look at things like, you know, CBRS or lower bandwidth so we could, what data can we push farther over greater distance, and how can we access that spectrum, those bands, to help carry the load? Because as we look, I still don't have any confidence that rural America will truly, we're not at 5G now. So to think we're going to be in a 6G or 6G-like environment, it's going to take policy changes with more like direct-to-device type things, more for those of us in farming with equipment considerations related to wattage and how much can be on the equipment and how close to the operator. I'm still concerned about things like redundancy when a system goes down. It's not if, it's when the system goes down. We've, as we push more through satellite, we've already seen with farming, especially in the last three seasons, planting seasons and harvest, these significant interruptions that have caused tractors to literally stall in the field because the GPS signal went down. It wasn't just lost.
Wow.
Went down.
Yeah.
So I think these issues really, you know, for issues of food security, for issues of population, safety, biosecurity, everything, we need to figure this out and get past the individual self-interest of essentially corporations to make things better.
Can you reflect on, because I imagine it would be sort of powerful, right? But what it's like to be a citizen of the United States and here you are like working on behalf of your government to like bring forward these recommendations about what rural areas need, right? And to be listened to and start to see those things listened to and acted on. I don't know. Was that a, I guess I hope that was a good experience. And I'm also curious about the years, the timing of all this. You said you were appointed in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so when did that end?
Well, the appointments had to be renewed over time. And fortunately, even with changes in administration, presidential administration, my appointment was renewed. And then actually moved up to, I jokingly called it the big people's table. So I was on the full task force. Initially, I was working group leadership and a participant, but then I was on the full task force for the majority then. And we concluded our work in essentially January of 2025. We had our last kind of official meetings in December of 24. And then the final report was released in 25 as a task force. And that was consistent with what the 2018 Farm Bill had directed and called for. So that in itself was an interesting policy intersection that you have Farm Bill coming out of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees and Natural Resource Committees instructing non-related federal agencies like the FCC to participate in this process. And that's kind of exciting, I think. And that was another recommendation coming from the task force, is to continue those conversations between the agencies to pull on each other's resources, because USDA, Department of Agriculture, has a lot of data from not only Ag Statistics, but also Economic Research Service and Ag Marketing Service, even Foreign Ag Service. I mean, they have all sorts of data and information, in addition to the Rural Utility Service, which is critical when we look at cooperatives and their structures. And like one of our recommendations was to allow for some grant funds and modifications, I think, on loans related to tower construction, for example, and build out and the types of eligibility requirements that cooperatives could receive. So it's interesting that, yes, that time frame, even though we concluded in 2025, there's still a small group of us who are continuing to try to get traction on some of the kind of longer term views. Like, for example, how do we enable edge compute, especially in this rapidly changing environment and the demands for energy that we have? We've talked about like the briefcase nuclear type solutions, and how could that possibly be integrated into rural cooperatives, where right now a lot of them rely on wholesalers for the majority of the energy.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of models do we need to be thinking about going forward? And have already had very preliminary discussions with some of the federal agencies to try to encourage this type of innovation, but like realistic innovation. We can step forward. We don't have to just leap and think that we're going to fall into some crevasse. We can actually edge our way literally into this ability to compute more data at the local level and not have brownouts or blackouts, or whatever they want to call them. You know, there again, I think those of us who are in rural America are, ironically, we're in the positions where the energy is created or extracted, but we're also in the tightest bargaining position, meaning the least powerful position, to try to influence that we continue to receive energy in a reliable way. So these things are so interconnected. When you talk about, you know, representing your government and communities, I guess I laughed because I didn't really feel powerful. I felt very humbled in the fact that you realize you don't know what you don't know until you start talking to people who do know. And then you think, oh, wow, this is a complete reframing and a lesson in leadership on my part to try to extract that knowledge and expertise and points of view and everything to get everybody pulling in the same direction as much as possible. And I felt like we were able to do a lot of that, you know, with just a few exceptions in at the end of the day.
That was Heather Hampton Nodal. We'll feature the second half of my interview with Heather next week when our conversation gets into digital agriculture, AI, and her advice for rural broadband providers. Heather was truly a joy to talk with and incredibly knowledgeable. You don't want to miss the second half of our interview. I hope you'll come back and join us for that episode. Thank you for listening to the Broadband Exchange. We'll see you next time.